As was mentioned, it's good to see everybody this morning. When I sit down to prepare a lesson, one of the first things I do is I stop and I ask myself, what do I need to do better? Where can I improve? Where am I lacking? And the reason I do that is because if I'm struggling with something, if I'm needing to improve on something, if I'm lacking in some area, chances are somebody here is as well. Probably several people are as well. And so I proceed from there. Well, I was reading something. This was already on my mind, and it's funny how sometimes you're thinking about something, and then something pops up that you're working on. It relates right there. And I was reading something about what a drug dealer said to a Christian, and this is what the end of what he said. He said, "When a kid gets up in the morning and heads off to school, I am there. When he comes home from school, I'm there. When he comes out to play, I'm there. They know where I am. Where are you?" And that's what I want us to answer ourselves this morning. Where are we? There's definitely something to be said about persistence from the drug dealer. Something about being there to fulfill the needs of others from the drug dealer. He's there to fulfill the need that he sees. It may not be what they need, but it's the need that he thinks that they need. And so I want us to think about that. Evil is all around us. Problems are all around us. Sorrow and sadness, struggles, those are all around us every day. But where am I when you're having that struggle? Where are you when someone else or I'm having that struggle? Where's the church when one of its members is struggling? Where are we? Yes, there may be one or two Christians who show up and they're there to fulfill that need. But why isn't the whole church there? Why aren't we all flocking to one another to fulfill that need? Where are we? Where are you? Where am I? To answer that question, I want us to look closer at the word compassion. Compassion is a very interesting word. The more I studied it, the more, and we'll look at a definition here in just a minute, and it kind of knocked my feet out from underneath me when you look at what compassion really means. The word compassion is mentioned some 46 times in the New King James Version. In the New American Standard Version, it is actually just over 100 times. You say, well, that's twice as many times. Why is there such a difference in there? And it's just because different translations use different words. It doesn't mean that they have any different meaning. Many times where the New King James uses the word compassion, the New American Standard uses the word mercy. And many times where the New American Standard says compassion, the New King James says mercy. And so they're interchangeable in that way. But sometimes they use different phrases. In 1 Kings chapter 3, when we see this story that we're mostly familiar with, a story that used to baffle me as a child and still baffles me today, of the two women who they're fighting over this one child. You remember they're each saying, "No, the child's mine, no, the child's mine." And so the decision is finally made, let's just cut this child in half. And you can have half each. And I want us to look at what it says there in verse 26 with the different translations about how these women reacted to this. In the New King James Version, it says, "Then the woman whose son was living spoke to the king," and it says, "for she yearned with compassion for her son. And she said, 'Oh, my Lord, give her the living child, and by no means kill him.' But the other said, 'Let him be neither mine nor yours, but divide him.'" And so there's one thing. She yearned with compassion. But the New American Standard says, "Then the woman whose child was the living one spoke to the king, for she was deeply stirred over her son." So one yearned with compassion. The other one was deeply stirred because of it. And what I want us to understand from that is, compassion isn't just, "Oh, I feel sorry for you." Feeling sorry for someone is not compassion. There's depth to it. If someone's about to cut your child in half, you're going to be 100% tuned in to their needs. And I would suggest that's the kind of attention that we need to be showing to one another. Tending to those needs, doing more than just saying, "I hope it gets better. I'm thinking about you." That's good. And we'll talk about that a little bit more as we go through the lesson. But I think more is required whenever we're talking about true compassion, according to the Bible. When I looked at the Strong's Concordance over what the definition of compassion was, here's the one that really kicked me at first. It says, to have the bowels, that is the spleen or the intestines, yearn. To feel sympathy or pity. To be moved with compassion. Like I said, I was very surprised. I even went and looked deeper into the subwords of this one. What do you mean by bowels? And again, it is exactly that. The spleen, the intestines, are yearning. They're yearning for that. They're hurting for that. And I think we understand what emotional attachment he's talking about here. You know, it's one thing just to feel sorry for someone, but to be that closely bound emotionally to them, where your stomach is in knots. Sometimes we call that being gut-wrenching. That is what that's the emotion we have whenever we're truly compassionate about someone. They're not the only ones suffering. We're the ones who are suffering with them along that. And that's what we're supposed to do. Again, rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. You are tied with that. And that's something that we've experienced here very recently. When you look back at Noah Webster, when he first put out the first version of the American Dictionary of the English Language back in 1828, this is how his definition of compassion began. He called it a suffering with one another, or a painful sympathy. Again, both of these definitions, they both talk about the emotional attachment that is tied together in this. Like I've already said, and I'm going to say it many times today, compassion means more than just feeling sorry for someone. It means we get down there with them. We get in the middle of their needs. And we suffer with them in their pain. And that's what we need to be doing. The other part of that, again, the painful sympathy part. It's interesting. You can't find it today in the versions of the dictionary. But back in this version, back in 1828, the illustration that he gave with the definition, he quoted Luke chapter 15 and verse 20. This is the place where the prodigal son is coming back to his father. And his father looks up at him. This is what it said there in the dictionary to illustrate compassion. He says, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and he kissed him. Again, this is an important verse because it again shows it's more than just a passing feeling for someone. It's an emotional tie that calls for a response when you feel that. And that's what Bible compassion is. We see the problem. We are moved by the need of that problem, and so we get into the problem with the person. We share in that together. And then we do everything we can to solve that problem so we can raise them up to a higher level than what they previously were at. That's what compassion is. You can see this throughout Jesus' life. He showed compassion. Even though he was the Son of God, he didn't sit there and let everyone else take care of the problems of others. He got in there and he had compassion, and he did something about it with people. We have several examples we can look at. First off, I want to look at what Peter says about this in Acts chapter 10. In verse 38, he says there, "You know of Jesus of Nazareth, how God anointed him with the Holy Spirit and with power, and how he went about doing good and healing all who were oppressed by the devil, for God was with him." He, that is Jesus, went about doing good, it says. We need to be like Jesus. We need to do like Jesus. He went around and he did good. He didn't just say, well, I hope you get better. We'll see that in several instances here. Throughout the Gospels, Matthew chapter 14, and all these were, if you haven't figured out yet, all those that are in parentheses, I'm just going to kind of mention, we're not going to read those for your use if you're going in getting ahead to turn somewhere. But in Matthew chapter 14, we see that Jesus has a large crowd who's following him. And it says there that he had compassion on this great crowd. And so what did he do? He healed their sick. And he also fed the 5,000. Again, he didn't just go to them and say, well, I hope you get your problems taken care of. I hope your sick heal, and I hope that y'all get something to eat. No, he did something about it. He went further into it, and he saw to their needs. We see that also there in chapter 15 and verse 32. We have another large group that's following him. And it says he had compassion on him. And then the 4,000 were fed. In Matthew chapter 20, he saw the two blind men of Jericho. And it says he had great compassion on him in verse 34. Or he was filled with compassion rather. And so he healed them on the spot as well. Now turn over to Mark chapter 1. Here's another amazing example showing how Jesus felt about compassion, what it really meant to him. In Mark chapter 1 and verse 40, we read, "And a leper came to him, beseeching him and falling on his knees before him. And he said to him, 'If you are willing, you can make me clean.'" Verse 41 says, "And moved with compassion, he stretched out his hand and he touched him. And he said to him, 'I am willing, be cleansed.'" Have you ever really stopped and thought about what really happened at that point? Jesus had such great compassion on this man that he reached out and touched a leper. That went against everything of the culture and society of that time. The Old Testament says if you were a leper, you're unclean. And people back then, if you were a leper, you got put in your own community. You didn't get to stay with everyone else. We don't want you to contaminate us. You're something else. We don't have anything to do with you, much less touch you. But Jesus had compassion on this man so much so, he didn't just say, "Hope you get better." He said, "Let me touch you." That's the kind of compassion we have. He didn't just say, "Well, I'll be praying for you." And I hope you understand what I mean by that. I'm not trying to negate the power of prayer whatsoever. We'll talk about that at the end of the lesson. But sometimes I'm afraid that "I'll be praying for you" is more of a default statement than a real action. I know that because I've done it. Maybe "I'll be praying for you." I did pray for you once, but then I got busy and I did other things. I didn't continue praying for you. Or maybe I just said it and I never even got to it. Do you see what I'm saying there? Compassion is more than just saying something. It's doing something. And so Jesus didn't just do that. He let compassion move him from feeling to a response and to an action. During the scripture reading we read this morning, or Thomas read for us this morning, he read us a story about this Good Samaritan. About this man, this familiar story we know about this man who showed compassion when other people wouldn't do it. This man who loved his enemy, not just his friend, and had compassion on him. On this particular day, we see that there was a man, a lawyer specifically, who tried to trick Jesus. And so he said, "Who's my neighbor?" Seems like a very simple question with a simple answer. Our neighbor is everywhere. Our neighbor lives on our street, lives next door to us. He drives on the same road that we do, eats at the same restaurants, goes to work the same place we do, goes to worship with us in the same place. Sure, everyone knows our neighbors, everyone who's around us. Simple answer. But what Jesus is asking him to do is anything but simple. These people, they understood that God commanded all of his people to love him as with all their heart. But then that's not all that is said there. When the lawyer is talking in verse 27, he quotes there from Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18. And he also mentions you are to love your neighbor as yourself. It's one thing to love your neighbor, but to love them as you would love yourself is a completely different thing. It's much deeper. And so for Jesus to help them understand this better, he went further and he said, "Let me tell you a story to help you understand what I'm talking about, what true love for a neighbor really means." And so he tells them of this man who's on his way from Jerusalem to Jericho. And he tells them about this man, how thieves come upon him and they beat him and they rob him and strip him down and they leave him for dead. And he goes further to tell him about these three men, this priest, this Levite, and this Samaritan. And how they all come by. And the first two men, the Levite and the priest, those who are supposed to be godly men, good people, they saw him and they stepped to the side. And then they went their way. But then he goes on to talk about this third man, this Samaritan. The Samaritans, as we know, they were trash. They were despised by everyone. They were hated by the Jews. The Jews had nothing good to say about those people. But this person, this half-breed trash, Jesus says, no, he did something that the other two wouldn't do. He noticed. He did something. He had compassion on these men, so he did something about it. Why didn't the other two stop? Well, we don't know, but maybe they were busy. Maybe they had places to go and people to see and things to do. I'm sure they were busy people. But, you know, and you think about it, well, we can't heal everybody. We can't fix everybody's problems, right? We can't fix the world's problems. We'll talk about that in just a second. There's lots of excuses for why they may not have done it. But this Samaritan, he did. He did what they weren't willing to do. It wasn't because he was less busy. It wasn't because he was more prepared to take care of this man. Jesus said, no, it's because he had compassion. He had compassion on him, and so he did that. Do you think that this Samaritan could relate to this man who's beat up and laid there on the ground? Absolutely. Being a Samaritan, he understood what it meant to be mistreated, to be abused, to be treated like trash and just left there. And so he could relate to this man. And so he treated him in the same way that he would like to have been treated himself. Sounds a lot like what Jesus commanded us to do in Matthew chapter 7, there in verse 12. The golden rule, as we call it. He says, therefore, however you want people to treat you, so treat them. For this is the law and the prophets. Raise your hand if you've never been so beaten down and knocked down by things in life that you just didn't know what you were going to do with it. Everybody in here has been, most everybody in here has not been beat down in life. I'm going to say this.
Sorry, I have been.
Okay, there you go. Everybody in this room. We have a confession. I'm just kidding. I didn't say it very well the first time. Everybody has been beat down. We've all been knocked down, and we really just don't know how I'm going to get up after this. It could be a death of someone in their family that just really just caught us off guard. It can be something with our job, some other thing, a spiritual thing will completely knock our feet out from underneath us. How do we want to be treated in that situation? Do we want somebody to walk by us and see our need and go, not today? Do we want somebody to just walk by us and say, well, hope that works out better for you? No. You know, kind words to someone may be exactly what they need, and I'm not trying to discount that either. We need to be willing to offer encouraging words, because really there are certain things that we can offer for certain people and more things that we can offer for others. I know that I'm not going to be able to offer the same kind of encouragement and uplifting for someone who you've been friends with for 50 years. But that doesn't mean my encouraging words don't mean anything to you. They may be exactly what I can do, the best thing I can do for you. But sometimes we need more. Sometimes we need someone to lift us up in a greater way than that. In James chapter 2, I'm reminded of what James talks about. He's talking about working faith here, but notice what he says there in verse 15. He says, if a brother or sister is without clothing and in need of daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and filled, and yet you do not give them what is necessary for their body, what use is that? Yes, maybe sometimes we need an encouraging word. But sometimes what we need is somebody to relate to us. Sometimes we need someone who's willing to invest themselves in us, to have compassion on us, and to be willing to get there and heal with us. More than just a word in passing. Again, what makes this so hard is that we're all different. Some people are very private. Some people are not comfortable opening up to just anybody. But that doesn't alleviate our responsibility to try to find out how we can help them. You know, I'll say this, you know, I don't know what this person needs. I don't know how I can possibly help them. I'll let somebody else do it. I've done that before, and I bet maybe you have too. Us not knowing what we can do does not alleviate us from our responsibility. And again, maybe we can't do very much, but we need to try to do everything that we can. But on the other hand of that, we also need to remember, if we're the ones hurting, and even if we are very private people, we need to remember that our brothers and sisters have a responsibility towards us. And we need to not hinder them from fulfilling that responsibility. That's a God-given responsibility to think about our brothers and sisters and do what we can for them. So if both sides of that will be considered about what is needed at that point, I think we can find a good common ground there. I want to go back to one thing I just said a while ago. I said that when it comes down to it, you just can't fix everyone in the world's problems. And I want to talk about that for just a minute. Have you ever known someone who is running themselves ragged trying to fix the world? Trying to fix everything that's going on, everybody's problems and so forth. I've seen it attempted several times. I don't think I've ever seen it completed ever. Some people do a really good job of that. Some people do everything they can to try to fix every marriage that's having problems. Some people try to make sure that every orphan is adopted or fostered. Some people try to do everything they can to make sure that every homeless person is aided in some way or another. But the sad reality of that is, you're never going to save every marriage, because it's not your marriage. You got to do something. The people that are involved in that have to do something about that. We're never going to get every orphan adopted. We're never going to help every single homeless person there is. That's just the reality of it. But that doesn't mean when God puts somebody in front of us that we don't help them. We've got to be willing to step out there and do what we can, understanding that we can't do it all. Maybe we can't do as much as the Samaritan did that day. Maybe all that we can do for somebody who is sitting there in darkness in their life at that moment is to light a little candle. Give them a little bit of light in their dark world at that moment. If that's what we can do, then we better be doing it. Light that candle. Do everything you possibly can for that person. But another aspect of this as well is don't overcalculate what's going to be expected of you in these situations. And this is kind of another side of this. Let me explain. When the Samaritan came upon this man laying there in the road, there's no way he could tell what was going to be expected of him from this complete stranger. I highly doubt he stopped there and made a mental calculation and said, you know what, if I stop and help this man, it's going to take a lot of my time. He's going to use all my wine and oil, all my bandages. I'm going to have to pick this man up and put him on my donkey, and I'm going to have to walk the rest of the way myself. And I'm going to have to pay for his hotel. I'm going to have to pay for his food. I'm going to have to pay for his doctor. I don't think he said that, because that stuff didn't matter. What mattered to him? What matters is I love this man the same way that I love myself. And so I'm going to treat him in that same way. But I'm afraid sometimes that's what we do. We discount ourselves. We remove ourselves from the equation because we look at it and say, you know what, I don't have the time. I don't have the resources. I don't have the money. I don't have the ability to do what this person needs. And so I'll let somebody else do that. And we justify it in our minds. We could have done something, but we said, since we can't do everything, I'll let somebody who's better equipped to do this. We let our insecurities take over and we don't do what we should have done. But my point is, no, we may not be able to do everything, but we should at least do something. Do what you can. Stop making excuses to do nothing in your life for someone else. Again, do what you can. Remember that you're never going to be able to do everything by yourself. And you know, it's a good reminder as we look back at the Good Samaritan here. He didn't do everything himself either. He did a whole lot. He took care of him that day. He took care of him back to the hotel, the inn that night. And he cared for him throughout the night. But what happened the next morning? He paid his bill and he said, I'm leaving him here with you. Now you can tend to him. I'm still going to be there to help support him financially and whatever he needs. But now I'm going to hand it off to you and let you do something now. And then I'll go back my way. And again, when I return, I'll take care of the rest of it. And so that's good for us to be able to see that. He didn't stay with him for the next month while he recovered, and we don't have a follow-up story. There's no sequel to it. What we needed to know was, this is what he did, because this is what he needed, and I was the neighbor that he needed me to be. No one can do it all. And thankfully, no one's being asked to do it all. But there is something that we all can do. So how can we start to be more compassionate in our lives if we're not already compassionate as we should be? As Jesus comes to the end of his story here, talking about this Good Samaritan, he ends the story by asking them a question and giving them a simple command to do. Back in verse 36, there in Luke chapter 10, Jesus says this, "Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell into the robber's hands?" Was it the priest? Was it the Levite? Was it the Samaritan? You know, this isn't some trick question. This is a question that Tex and Mandy could answer. Obviously, the one who proved that he was the neighbor was the Samaritan. But Jesus continues on in verse 37, and he gives us this simple application. He says, go and do the same, or go and do likewise. And what that tells us is, if we want to prove to be a neighbor, like this man was, then we've got to do what the neighbor did. Do these same things. It's not some words, it's getting tied into it, doing the actions that are required in there. But the real question here is not, who is my neighbor? The real question, really, of the story of the Good Samaritan is, what kind of neighbor am I going to be for those who need me? That's really what he's trying to get them to understand throughout this whole thing. And so we've got several questions we need to ask ourselves. We need to ask ourselves, did I have a chance to do good for someone? To obey God's commands, to be the brother or sister that I needed to be, but I passed it up? Could I have done more, but yet I did less than I could have? Those are questions we need to ask ourselves. Did we pass off or neglect an opportunity that was right there in front of us? Someone needed me and I didn't do it. Can we say that? Again, compassion is not something that you say. Compassion is something that you do. And I want to give you three things this morning that will help us to be more compassionate. I'm sure there's many others, but these are three immediate ones that I think of. First one is, pray aggressively. Like I said, nothing of this lesson is to take away or minimize the power of prayer. We've done a lot this morning talking about we need to take things into our own hands. But the first thing we need to do is make sure we put things into God's hands. Where we are limited on what we can do, God is unlimited on what He can do. And so if we can't do anything else for someone else, we can pray. But again, don't just say it. Do it. Pray. Pray fervently. And know that God can answer our prayers. The second thing that I think we need to do is invest you. Invest you. Again, at the beginning of the lesson, remember I talked about this drug dealer talking to this Christian. And at the end of his thing, he says, they know where I am. Where are you? If we really want someone who is suffering to be able to recover from these things that they're suffering with, we've got to invest you. We've got to invest our time. We've got to invest our energy. We've got to invest our heart. And maybe we even have to invest a little bit of money, depending on the situation. But if we truly want them to recover from these things, we need to let them know where you are. You. Who am I? That's where I am. And then finally, the last one is, stop planning to be compassionate. Do it. Start being compassionate right now. Don't wait to do it until later. Well, when the next time it comes, then I'll do it. It's here right now. Somebody here this morning needs the thing that you can offer for them. Maybe only you can offer for them. Someone needs some encouragement right now. Maybe your words are the words that are going to shine the brightest in their eyes. They're going to ring the loudest in their ears. It's amazing. And I've experienced this, and I don't even know how to explain it really. But people have come back, and we would say something to someone or do something, and it's just a minor thing, but they would come back later, and they say, man, you have no idea how big that was. And reciprocate the same way. People do small things in their minds, but to me, it was huge. And so we shouldn't discount those things. Somebody needs me today. Somebody needs you today, not someone else. To do it. We don't assume that someone else is going to do what needs to be done. That's our responsibility. The Samaritan didn't see that need that day as somebody else. He saw, I'm the person to do that today. And so I'm going to do it today. Not just think about it and maybe do it later. I'll come back in 15 minutes and check on him, see if someone else hadn't come and done it. No. He saw a need and so he jumped on it. Maybe somebody is struggling below a heavy load this morning. And you're the only one that can really lift it up off their shoulders. Maybe somebody's got a bunch of things, a string of problems that just hit them. And they're off their feet. But you're the only one that can keep them continuing on and not giving up with what they're facing. We're all in a race and we need somebody to encourage us. But the question is, are you going to wait to do it? Are you going to do it? We can always find excuses. We're busy. I've got people to see, places to go, things to do, like we said. Everybody's busy. But are you going to have compassion? Or are you going to wait there and let somebody else do that? What kind of neighbor are you going to be for someone else? Like I've said throughout the lesson, if compassion is not personal, it's not compassion at all. May God help us to be men and women of compassion who will put ourselves in that situation, that we will, I can't think of the word right now, that we will grab, what is that word? I'm sorry. That we'll be there. We'll reach out. We will invest ourselves, I think that's the word I'm looking for, in someone else and be exactly who they need us to be. It's not just that they want us to be there. They need us to be there. Are we going to be those people or not? I appreciate your time this morning. We actually finished up in a better time than I thought we were, so that's good. You know, we talked about the Good Samaritan this morning. We've talked about a great example of compassion. But that's not even close to the greatest example of compassion that we see. We know that Christ offered an unimaginable compassion for us, an unsurpassed compassion for us. When we needed Him the most, when we were down because of our own sin and selfishness, He did exactly what we needed. He sacrificed Himself, and that's exactly what we've talked about today, sacrificing ourselves because others need us. And that's exactly what Christ did for us. But even more so than just being there for us, He said, you know what, if you'll just turn to Me, if you'll obey Me, if you will have your sins forgiven because of the blood that I offered you, be baptized and have those things washed away, live righteously the rest of your life, stop serving yourself, you know what, in the end, you'll have a home in heaven for all eternity. That is a deal too good to pass up. But unfortunately, some are passing it up. They choose to pass it up. Day by day, they wait and say, well, maybe I'll do it later. Maybe at a better opportunity, a more opportune time, I'll do that. Maybe tomorrow, maybe next week, maybe whenever I'm a little more, I brought the right clothes, I'm more prepared to do it. Maybe I'll do it then. Maybe when there's not so many people there, I'll do it. But then tomorrow doesn't come. Now is the time to do that. That opportunity is there for you. Maybe you need some compassion this morning for yourself, because we all do from time to time. Maybe we're down. Maybe we're struggling with something and we are having a hard time doing it ourselves. Maybe we need that compassion for ourselves. And we're willing to offer that for you this morning. If you have some spiritual need, baptism, forgiveness of sins, prayers, whatever we can help you with this morning, don't wait. Do it now. If we can help you, won't you come right now as we stand and sing?